Blog Talk Radio.
All right, you're listening to The Unknown Show. I'm your host, Bud Smith. On tonight's show, we're going to talk to Wolf Karsten of Domestic Rights Press. We're going to talk to April Michelle Bratton of Up the Staircase and author of It Broke Anyway. Thanks for listening. I'm Bud Smith, and this is The Unknown Show. It's Tuesday again, and I'm happy to say on the show today, I got two great guests coming on to talk about a lot of great stuff they got going on. First on the show, we're going to have Wolf Karsten, and he's going to come on, and he'll tell you all about his various projects he has going on. He's the helm of Epicroids Press, which is the thing I really dig. Bunch of great writers, lots of great books. He'll talk about all that stuff. He's also doing Tree Killer Inc. and the Ground Zero Poetry Reading series in Canada. I'm going to pull him on now. I think he's from Alberta. Wolf, where are you from? Where are you doing your readings at?
I am straight from Mittenhead, Alberta.
There you go, Alberta. Holy fuck, I got it right on the first try.
Absolutely, man.
So, yeah, man, it's a real pleasure to have you on the show, and I'm looking forward to talking to you about all the cool shit you got going on. How's your night going up there in Alberta?
It's a gorgeous night out here. We had a late summer, so It seems it's going to stick around for a while. The trees are still green. It's been a weird summer, though. It's been hotter than hell every day. Thunderstorms and tornadoes every night. So, you know, what can you do? I love it.
Oh, yeah, I love that kind of stuff too. I'm from New Jersey, and a lot of thunderstorms, a lot of shit blowing over. It's great. So I'm excited to talk to you about. First of all, let's talk about Epic Rights Press. What's going on? What's new with Epic Rights?
All right, what's new? Well, we just did our first Epic Rights T-shirt that features the poetry of the legendary John Yamris. He wrote this poem called Gimme Poetry, and it absolutely embodies, you know, what I want the press to do. It embodies what I want to do with the live events. It embodies what I want to do with my television show, Poets Underground. The poem goes like this. Give me poetry that's new, that fails, that makes mistakes. Give me poetry that you don't know what in the world you need to name it. Give me poetry that bleeds from the eyes and shouts at the world. Give me poetry that stands naked and beaten, with its back against the wall, still screaming, I am now. So we took that poem and we jacked it onto a T-shirt. I heard from the printer that they should be in tomorrow, so I'm really excited about getting those. Those will be available at treekillerinc.com.
Great.
So it's and I only print in extra large. My theory is it's a black shirt, white lettering. They're all extra large. My theory is if it doesn't fit, you're not drinking enough beer. And if you need a bigger one, you're drinking too much.
Yeah, so, there you go.
There you have it.
Yeah.
So that's really exciting. I've done some T-shirts already. I've never put a poem on a shirt, and to be perfectly honest, until I read this poem by John, and the idea never occurred to me. But now that I have, you know, I'm really glad I have. I think the mission, as far as it goes personally for me, is to bring poetry and other underground literature, short stories, novels, bring it out from the fucking the concrete basement where it's been relegated and up into the mainstream. So I'm always looking for new ideas to do that. So to put it on a T-shirt, to put it on a postcard, to do broadsides, To spray paint it on the side of a fucking bus. You know, I mean, we need to do these things to, you know, let the world know that fucking, you know, what they're reading, man, is bullshit. What the people at Chapters tell you to buy is bullshit. You know, keep books dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah, books need to be dangerous, you know. That's no doubt about that.
You know, speaking of dangerous, I heard that Hideout Press just released some copies of John Dorsey's new book, 20 Poems About Girls, and they did some really neat. They used the covers are made of birch. So
nice.
You want to keep books dangerous, man. If you buy it and you like it, great. If you don't, you can burn the book for heat. And if someone comes at you, you can fucking knock them down with the fucking sheer weight of the book. So that's a really exciting thing, and that's a great example about thinking big in the small press, you know?
Yeah.
I think a lot of small press publishers sit on their books and try to hatch them like eggs. They're always so concerned with the bottom line. I kind of operate in the opposite direction. A small press that thinks big and operates like a big press. So I'm always shooting up broadsides, postcards, bookmarks, making sure that the things make it out of my basement and onto the streets and into the hands of people. You know, so it's very cool.
Well, I would say that my first experience of you seeing that was I was clicking around and you had all these books that were donated to prisons and halfway houses and stuff. I think I saw somewhere. That to me, it was really great. I saw that. I was like, oh wow, this is an example of really getting books out there in different kinds of hands. That's really really great.
Yeah,
am I getting it wrong?
It's always important to get. For me, it's important to get books and spoken word performances into places that don't normally get them. You know, Johnny Cash doing a concert from prison, right?
Yeah.
You know, we've sent them out to halfway houses, boys and girls clubs. We've sent them to nursing homes. We've sent them to prisons. We've sent them to hospices. And a big part of Ground Zero, which is alive, I have one scheduled event every month.
Yeah.
In addition to that, I do other concerts in other places. So, you know, you walk in with the sound system, you walk into the nursing home or the hospice, you walk in with your sound system, you set up, and you deliver a show.
There you go.
Absolutely.
And that's
like Cheech and Chong in the back of the band, you know, they just kick open the back doors and they jump out and fucking play.
Yeah.
Same theory. And yes, and we do smoke the weed too, so... Hey, it's all good.
Yeah, if you're gonna go to the hospice, you gotta smoke the weed, right? That's like rule number
Absolutely.
One, and rule number two, and rule number three. It just keeps going. It's like the first 11 rules of going to the hospice.
Yeah,
so
they usually have
other
stuff too, which is always nice.
Yeah. So there's some other really really cool Epic Rights Press shit coming up. I've been excited for a while. I've been waiting for Misty Rainwater Light's book to come out, Bullshit Rodeo. How's the progress of Bullshit Rodeo looking? Is there a tentative release date yet or anything?
You know, we some things have happened. So Acute Tombstone by Zuna Zabriskie. I'm running a couple months behind. I showed up at my printer last month, and I expected to pick up my print run of Acute Tombstone. Instead, I found a boarded-up door and a sign that said out of business.
Okay.
So I had to look around for printers. Unfortunately, I don't know what it is with the printing industry, but I always find jacked-up prices, and you got printers who don't know their ass from their elbow. So it took a while to find a new one. So I finally got that book. I should be getting the proof any day now.
Nice.
So with Bullshit Rodeo, where I'm at there... doing the final edits on the file now, and then that one will be immediate. As soon as we have everything squared away there, that'll be out. I'm shooting for no later than Halloween.
Very, very cool.
Unfortunately, I'm running a few months behind, but, you know, that shit happens, and you just go with the punches. So along the way, I figured, okay, well, I can't do books. Well, I can do them now, but I couldn't do them then, so I go, well, fuck. I'm going to put out some T-shirts. I'm going to put out some postcards. I'm going to put out some, the chapbook, the tree killering chapbook, put out a bunch of stuff where I can, because, you know, I absolutely hate being chained down to some kind of middleman. I've talked about, you know, Karl Marx meets Napoleon revolution, right? Give me the means and machinery. Let me do it myself, and I will fucking, I will shoot them out. I will get them out like machine gun fire, but until that day comes, I'm still bound by a printer. But I have found another one, a new one. Their product looks great. I get along with the guy, so it should be good.
Badass. Well, that's all you, that's all you can hope to do, you know, find another working relationship with somebody that kicks ass, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I want to touch a little bit on the, you mentioned Zarina Zarinsky's new book. I read Iron. I got it from her. I met her in Albuquerque, I think in 2011, and that was a really great collection. How would you compare the upcoming collection, the title, and what's the comparison to the last one?
Well, Acute Tombstone is a short story again, but it's a long short story. The book's 50 pages, so it's, you know, kind of borderline on the novella. It's actually the first story that I read by Zabriskie. It's the one that actually got me excited about reading more about publishing Arn. It was the stepping stone for Arn. So in this book, Arn, all the stories were, well, I mean, obviously connected by Arn in some way, shape, or form. Acute Tombstone is a, it's actually a really humorous, dark, fighting look at mortality and, you know, the silly things that we need to go to when we die and when our loved ones die.
Mm-hmm.
So it's and it's a lot like Arn. We branded it the same way. We have Sammy, IamSammyDesign.com, doing the exterior again. We have images inside the book, just like we did with Arn. So it works out to be a poem and a short story. We have two images again. We have that trademark hammer and sickle, and we've, of course, replaced the hammer with a high-heeled shoe. So it's a great book. Like I say, it was the first one I read by her, but it didn't fit into Arn in any way, shape, or form. It's really one of those standalone pieces that will just knock you on your ass. So, like I say, and that one should be good to go any single day. I'm just waiting for the proof, and if it looks good, we're going to hit the juice and get that one out.
Very nice. That's cool, man.
Then we got Bullshit Rodeo, of course. We also have Swallowtude by Rob Plath, which is a novella. We have Phoebe and Ido Are Dogs by John Yamris, which is an illustrated children's book. We have Hearts for Brains by Rob Plath, illustrated children's book again. 43 by Mike Mraz, which is a poetry collection. The Ship is Sinking by Matt Galletta, and that's another poetry collection. So that's what I have lined up in the canon.
Well, it sounds like a hell of a lineup there. I just stumbled upon Matt Galletta's work because he sent something in for the Virginity Anthology that I was thankful enough for you sent something for also. And
did he make it in?
He's got something in there. Ugly Ducks or something. I'm a dumbass. I can't even remember my own middle name, so you'll have to forgive my attention to detail.
Hey, no worries.
But man, you got some great shit coming up. Epic Crisis got some great stuff coming up. I'm curious if I can get you to read some of your own writing now. We've been talking a lot about everybody else's stuff. Do you have anything you'd like to read tonight?
Well, you know, it's interesting, of course. My first book, Truly Mistaken for Life, was very well received. My newest book, The Abyss Gazes, also came out 2 months ago, and that one's actually fucking doing really well. I only have a couple copies left from the printing. I've been writing lots of new stuff. I have a new book, which is, hopefully I'm going to get that out early next year. The reason being that I find myself reading that material quite a bit in public, so you know, bus stops and alleyways, and so let's see here. I'll tell you what, man. I'll just go ahead and read a bunch of new ones in a row. How about that?
Yeah, I would like that. You got plenty of time here. If you like to, I always like when people set them up a little bit as they go. If that's your thing, if you do that at all, go for it. All right.
Yeah. Well, you know, they shouldn't need any setup.
Well, there you
Hell,
go.
Hell, they don't even need titles. So.
Sounds
you
good.
Know, here's one. This is a new one. I really like it. When Cell was diagnosed with bone cancer and doctors amputated his left arm, he took it rather well. In fact, his only real complaint was being out the $400 he spent on the tattoo. The thinker, I got my kids to see if they understood that one. All right, here he goes, man. Here's a funeral.
Cool, man. Thanks.
There's been a team of electricians in our house all week trying to determine why the power in our bedroom keeps going out. After stripping away the drywall, they discovered that a faulty connection had started a fire in the junction box above our bed. Explaining the situation to my wife, she just shrugged her shoulders, then said, "That's ironic, because I could have sworn there hasn't been any fire in our bedroom for over a decade." When asked what she wanted for Christmas, my wife, a bowling enthusiast, replied, "I want a new pair of shoes, a wrist brace, and a set of balls." I just looked at her, smiled, then said, "Honey, I can help you out with the shoes and the brace, but after that, you're on your own." My bike had a flat tire, so I borrowed my wife's. As I was coming back from the gas station, a group of kids in a souped-up Chevy truck slowed down and shouted, "Blanket!" at me as they passed. "Blanket," I said, laughing. "What a strange thing to say." At home, I explained what happened to my wife. "What do you think it means?" I asked her. "Were you wearing that shirt?" "Yes," I said. "Were you wearing that hat?" "Yes," I said. "Were you riding my bike?" "Yes," I said. At this point, my wife just laughed. Shook her head, then said, "Honey, I'm pretty sure they yelled faggot." My daughter Raven has been learning how to sew. After stitching together a few crudely constructed pillows for her brothers and sisters, she started making small teddy bears for her friends at school. "The worst part about sewing," she said, "is getting poked by the needle." "I hate that," her mother agreed. "How many times have you been poked by the needle?" Raven asked. At this point, my wife just looked at her, laughed, and said, "Maybe you should ask her father." There's my one needle dick joke.
Yeah, you gotta have that.
I've been self-employed for over 2 decades, drifting from one ridiculous career to another. Wrestling promoter, bounty hunter, small press publisher. At one point, I was even a professional poker player, but found when the stakes were high, there was enough ice in my veins to push my chips all in. Anyway, realizing that my only salvation was to get a real job, I cut my hair, shaved my beard, and dug my best suit out of storage. After putting it on, I couldn't overlook the strange smell. "Smells like mothballs," Alexandria exclaimed. "No, it's cat pee," Raven added. "I think it's mold," Bear said. "I don't know what it is," I said, "but it smells fucking disgusting." At this point, my wife got up from the couch, straightened my tie, kissed me on the cheek, and whispered in my ear, "It's the stench of failure, my dear. I should know. I've been living with it for 20 years. All right, and finally, it was the first time I'd been inside a bottling plant in 20 years. The manager showed me to my locker, then toured me through the facility, the mixing room, the filling station, the conveyor belts that snake their way through the plant like a massive tapeworm. I'd taken my shot at immortality and lost. Now here I was, restored to the earth, dwarfed by the hiss, clank, and clatter of meaningless machinery. Back in his office, he turned to me and asked, "So, did anything in there look familiar?" "Yeah," I said, the look of fear in everyone's eyes.
Wow, that's something else.
There you go, man.
It's a hell of a batch of poems there. One in particular really got me thinking. Was that true? You worked as a wrestling promoter, or just
You know what? I have worked as a wrestling promoter. I have done. If there's a way to make money without having to fucking put on a suit and tie and punch into a clock, I have either tried it, thought of it, and failed at it. So
there
yeah, man, I've done it all. Absolutely.
What kind of wrestling did you promote? Were you talking about?
If you take the WWF and you go down about three levels, just local, you know, you had all the characters, or at least people trying to create their own characters. Had the Jimmy Harts, the Bobby Brains, you had, you know, the guy who gets up there and does his stick. It was really fun. I think my highlight was getting, I don't know if you're familiar with the old time, but I actually got knocked on my ass by Bad News Brown. I don't know if you know who he is.
No, yeah, I don't know who he is, but I like...
Well, he came flying by. I was outside the ring, but I wasn't paying attention to what was happening. Got lost up in it all. He came flying down. I mean, this guy was, he had to have been 300 pounds of solid muscle. And he just went right by me, and I just went flying about 6 feet. So, you know, and there was a lot of fights, but the security wasn't great, but it was an experience, you know.
Sounds like it. Badass, man. So now you have, I want to talk a little bit about the TV show you have. You're starting up now, and you talk a little bit about that.
You're talking about Poets Underground?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Poets Underground, let's see. This is a poetry show that celebrates and showcases the best authors currently working the marrow in contemporary poetry. At least that's my party line. We shot the pilot episode last month with the legendary John Yamras. It was fucking fantastic. We're going to do the show. The show's 27 minutes. It gets beamed out through a station here in town. Then I take it and I'm going to put it up onto YouTube, and I'm going to have it there so it'll be archived for anyone who wants to see it. The show is in pre-production right now. I'm shooting the second episode next Tuesday with the great Long Beach poet publisher Artie Armstrong. So the way it goes down, the show is taped live at Brittany's Lounge.
Okay.
So we do it on the same day as the Ground Zero. So we tape the show around 6:30, and then come 8 o'clock, you know, you stick around and you get down for the live event. So next Tuesday, I'm having Artie Armstrong and the blues man Robbie Taylor. Should be a fantastic show.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. It's really great to hear, you know, somebody who's got so much stuff going on. I talk to a lot of people who they want to get more involved in writing and getting their stuff published, and I guess you just got to really just do it yourself, right? There comes a point.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Napoleon meets Karl fucking Marx, man. It's the only way to go, and that's how the small press has survived as long as it has, you know. You look at some of the fantastic work coming out of places like Henry Dunander's Kamini Press. I mean, those are handcrafted chapbooks that are top-shelf quality, and that's what we need to do, you know. It's got to get down, get dirty, and get it done. So, you know, it's interesting, too, of course, with Epic Rights Press. I'm doing this postcard project.
Uh-huh.
Basically, what I've done is I've taken the work of Henry Dunander, the amazing watercolor portraits.
Yep.
So I'm using his watercolor portraits as the front of the card. Then on the back, I have basically, you know, by invitation only, asked some poets to get together and to write me a poem or give me a poem that best describes the philosophy behind their work. So again, we have in that series we have John Yamaris, William Taylor Jr., Henry Dinander, Rob Plath, John Dorsey, myself, and of course the legendary, the great, late Todd Moore.
There you go.
So that's, I'm working on those seven. When I'm done, it'll be a set of 12, and I think it should be fantastic. And also with postcards, I'm doing two breakup postcards that features art and words by R.L. Raymond. So the postcard is the perfect format for these. Of course, we have Raymond's art on the front. We have the breakup poem on the back. And we just leave a little bit of space there for you to say, you know, have a good life, asshole, you fucking bastard. Put a stamp on it, throw it in the mail, and you're good to go.
That's great. That's wonderful. I went to somebody loaned me their house in L.A. for a little while. I went there, and they had the refrigerator was just full of magnets that had short poems on it, similar to what you're talking about with the postcards, but they're magnets for the refrigerator. And I thought it was great because, you know, I think through my life I've found going back and rereading things, you know, you find so many different angles to it sometimes, depending on the poem. And, hey, man, you open up the refrigerator door, here's that poem again, look at it. Oh, I never thought about it that way, you know. Pull out the jug of milk, close the fucking refrigerator, you know, walk away from it. But, yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
That's really great.
I love that. Yeah.
All these
brilliant. I love
formats.
It. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it. It's a great idea.
So what's your trick?
So
I should mention
we're talking about new stuff here. As far as another way to get the word out there, you know, one of the things that I enjoy has always been having poetry read to me. So, you know, you go back to the great spoken word CDs. You got, you know, Jack Michelin in Amsterdam, John Thomas, Harold Norse. You know, Stuart Perkoff, I think, is definitely one of the top shelf ones. So I went ahead and I brought down John Yamaris straight from Sinking Springs, Pennsylvania, put him on stage. The whole thing was recorded, mixed by the great Randall Edwards. Thank you, Randall. I appreciate it. And I'm going to be putting that out as an attempt to bring back the spoken word on CD. So I got to tell you, man, this CD absolutely is fantastic. Like, I couldn't have asked for it to turn out better. John Yamaris was on fire. He delivered such an amazing performance. The crowd was great. Laughed their asses off, applauded. It was all perfect. And we also had Mrs. Laura Joel come down, who is this fantastic singer-songwriter. So she was down as well. So we doubled up and recorded that performance as well, which was absolutely amazing. So we're going to be putting that out as well. So a spoken word CD and a music CD, and we're just working now with the CD itself is done. We just we're working on the cover art and the liner notes. So that should be fun. I'm really excited about that.
Well, that sounds like a great workflow.
It's actually beautiful to be able to drive somewhere and listen to a CD that I made. You know, with books, it's so funny because with books, you're an editor, you'll probably understand this. By the time you get through editing a book, you never want to look at it again. You never want to pick it up. You never want to do anything. You're super proud that it's done, but you must have read that thing 15 times, intensively, forwards, backwards. So it's nice to be able to do something like to do a T-shirt. Now I get to wear my own wardrobe, jump in the Astro 2000, listen to a CD that I made. So I'm really digging that, you know?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean with making the CDs. I played in bands and stuff, and it's great driving around listening to your own music until somebody catches you, you know?
Absolutely. Like, and, you know, it's
is
another
that your
way to
fucking
get...
band? Yeah. It's great.
Yes. You know, what I love, too, is that, you know, when I did the T-shirts, it opened up another area of the mainstream marketplace to me So, of course, you get in with the T-shirt, and then you start sneaking the other stuff in.
Oh, yeah.
And again, with the CDs, that's opened up another market for me as well. So it's exciting to be able to go in and, you know, send something off to a radio station and say, hey, man, check this out. I think there's a single in here. Check it out. Or to have at our guerrilla radio station here in Edmonton is called Edmontoons, and it's run by the madman and brainchild Larry Travis. So it's really nice because he's come down to Ground Zero shows, he's recorded them, and he's put them out live over the, or not live, but he's rebroadcast them over the radio. So now it's another way to get in. My ultimate goal, of course, is to have take any mainstream radio station and have them run a sound clip of John Yamers reading one of his poems, you know. It's something that I think fits well with the radio medium, and hopefully I can make it happen.
Well, I'll tell you what. Well, it seems like you have a lot of great ambition, and, you know, I love all the stuff you do. Epic Great Stuff's looking great. I'm looking forward to checking out some of these new titles, especially the Mickey Rainwater's novel. I read an early draft of it. I loved it. Can't wait to see that. And Zarina's always great, too. So some of this stuff coming out looks wonderful to me, and I'm looking forward to seeing this TV show when it finally pops up and hearing these CDs. So I want to thank you for coming on and reading, man. It was a pleasure to have you.
Well, you know what? Thank you so much for letting me share my madness. And it's been a pleasure, man. So I'm going to stick around. I'll listen to April. And continued success, my friend.
Thank you.
Well, here, I'll tell you what, man. Why don't we end on a poem?
Sure, please. Give me a poem for the end here.
All right. When the human skull was passed around the lecture hall, the speaker encouraged us to listen and to let it whisper its secret, then to say the first thing that came to mind to the person sitting next to us. When it was my turn to pass the skull, although I had intended to lighten the mood by saying something funny, as I placed in her hands, all I could think to say was, "You're next, motherfucker."
Yeah.
All right, brother.
That's
a great night, man. Thank you again.
Thank you. Have a great night.
Cheers.
All right, cheers, man. So that was Wolf Carstens. Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure to talk to Wolf Carstens. Next on the show is going to be April Michelle Bratton. And I'm a fan of April's work. I'm actually going to read you a little bit of her bio here. April was born in Mario, Louisiana. She has a BA in English from Minot State University, and she's been included in some great lit mags, Beat the Dust, Santa Fe Literary Review, many others. And she has reached final status in the Best of the Net competition, and she's a Pushcart Prize nominee. She has a few chapbooks, Raw Dogs and Other Metaphors, which is available now through Maverick Duck Press. And her mini chap, which I got in the mail randomly one day from Michelle of Citizens for Decent Literature, and her mini chap is called Drink This. I really like that. And April's first full-length collection, It Broke Anyway, is available now from Neo Poses Press. April, are you there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
How's it going?
It's going good. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm, sitting here drinking some coffee. My wife stuck her head in the door a few minutes ago, and she said, "I found 3 beers in the refrigerator." So that made me, like, so happy. I was like, holy shit. It's like finding gold. She found it behind the lettuce.
I've been drinking some wine. Good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, we got some recent good news. The corner store just down the block from us opened back up. It was closed for a year, so now we can walk half a block down the. I live in New York City, so I can walk half a block down the hill instead of walking 8 blocks up the hill for some beer or a sandwich or whatever. So tell me a little bit about how's everything going in Minot right now? It's called from North Dakota, right?
My Knot is what it's called.
My Knot. Isn't that what I said? Minot. What did I say? Minot? Minot? Minot?
Minot. I think you were trying to fancy it up. There's really no fancying it up. It's just, why
dude,
not?
I don't even know what town I'm from. You know, I can look at the water tower and try to sound it out. You know, so when I screw up people's hometowns, you know, it goes with the turf here. I got brain damage, a little bit of brain damage. All that paint, you know. So what's going on in whatever the hell your town's called?
Minot.
Minot.
Yeah. Nothing much. It's pretty much the same all the time in Minot, North Dakota.
Yeah?
But I don't know. I've been here forever. In the summer, it's wonderful.
Uh-huh.
I love it here. It's the winter that sucks.
Yeah.
-40 degrees, blizzards. Yeah.
Uh-huh. You get to dig in and do a lot of reading and writing and all that crap, though, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. But I swear, if I write one more winter poem, I'm just going to die. Seriously.
Yeah. So it is a great, it's got to be a fucking great burden, you know. But I got to deal with, you know, being from New Jersey, I got to deal with all these greasy people with their, you know, spiked hair and yellow Mustangs. So that's my burden. Sorry to hear you have to
greasy deal with people. Stuff.
Greasy people with yellow Mustangs. Yep, that's what I deal with. So I'm excited to check out your new book. I really enjoyed your mini chap that came out last year. I'm actually looking at it right now. I got it. I went and bought a fucking bookshelf. Can you believe it? Next to my desk, there's no longer a pile of 1,000 books. There's now a bookcase. I just found your mini chap right here right now. And I got to say that my favorite poem in it was probably the one that has the funniest name. It was a coincidence. And the title was "For Jay and the Longest Pierced Dick I Have Ever Seen." that was a great, great poem. Really cool little book. So can you tell me a little bit about your new book? Me and everybody else who's listening, everyone's curious. They're leaning in closer to their computer speakers right now.
Oh, sure. You're talking about It Broke Anyway?
Yes.
It was actually released almost a year ago in October of 2012.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So it's been out for about a year, and it's from Neopoiesis Press with the wonderful mm-hmm. editor, Bill Winslow,
okay.
who has done some amazing work over there. And what do you want to know about it?
I guess that is a tricky question to ask a poet who puts out a collection of poetry, because you can just tell me, well, they're a bunch of fucking poems. Why don't you read them? It's not like I'm trying to get you to describe a plot of a novel or anything. So I guess that question doesn't really make sense, does it?
Well, I mean, it's basically just because it was my first full length collection, so
uh-huh.
it was basically just. I don't want to say it was like a collection of like my favorite poems that I've written over the years, but I mean, pretty much like the best came in there. I was just really excited to finally have, you know, someone offer to publish my work in this capacity. And I mean, it's a beautiful book. Like the cover that we found is amazing, and the quality that Neopoiesis Press puts out is just awesome. They make really great books.
Yeah,
so,
I have Nirvana Haymakers sitting here too. Yeah, they do. They do great books.
Yeah.
Judging from what I've seen, just from Mr. Frank Reardon's book, quality is very cool. Very cool. But
yeah.
I have not been a good reader over the last year. I've been a fucking horrible reader. I haven't read too many books. I've probably read about 6 of them in a year, and that's like the worst I've ever done in my life. So you'll have to forgive me if there's 6 billion people on Earth, somewhere thereabouts, and I think 2 billion of them are writers or aspiring writers. So I've read 6 books out of 2 billion people. My track record is very, very poor. And I'm going to read yours. I'm going to order it tonight, so fuck it. But I want to know, what's the difference here? Awesome. What's the difference here? Tell me, let's get down to brass tacks. What's the difference when you say you have to figure out what your favorite poems are, which ones you want to put in your collection? What do you do? Do you do a bunch of readings? You see which ones work best? Are you just going by your gut on them? Is your editor helping you choose? What's the thing? Do you just put them all in a random hat and pick? How to work? And also, how the fuck do you know how long a full-length collection is? A full-length, to me, it could be anything. You could say,
know.
Oh, my full-length collection of poetry, and it's 2,000 pages long. You know?
Well, I feel like this one is actually pretty long. I've actually gotten some criticism that it's too long. It's 160 pages.
Uh-huh.
And
What a criticism. It's a fucking book. You know?
No, I've gotten a couple criticisms that it was too lengthy. And I don't know if that's just like Fast Food Nation. They want everything slimmed down for them or what, but I didn't feel like it was too long, of course, but basically it was a mixture of gut and a mixture of the editor helping me choose which ones deserve to be in it. So
it's always great when you can have somebody in your corner helping you having your back with what works and what doesn't. With a short story collection or poetry collection, I think it becomes really vital because, I know myself, like, I would probably just, I think I just have to pick randomly, you know? I mean, I don't think I put a whole lot of fucking, I don't think certain things are better than others, you know? I had a friend of mine, he put out a book, and he wanted to put out a 500-page book of short stories, and his publisher said you can put out half. So he was telling me how he went about picking the stories, and he had to just randomly select them. He couldn't figure it out. But I guess you didn't have that problem.
Well, one thing I learned from Dale was that there are some poems or stories that you just are emotionally attached to that might not be as great as you think they are. And for just some reason, you feel so connected to that, you know, you think it's really great. And then, you know, I really enjoyed the honest feedback that I got from Dale. It was just like, you know, I understand that this one is really important to you, but if you read it again from an objective point of view, it's really not that awesome. And
yeah,
he
was
right most of the time. I mean, we did argue a couple of times. I'm like, no, this is good. It's staying in. But most of the time, she was right, you know, and I was like, oh, my God, this is shit.
I guess another method would be she could have said, okay, April, print the poem out and leave it on a random bus bench and see when the stranger comes and reads it, if they rip it up or if they fold it up and put it in their pocket. If they rip it up, it's not in. If they take it away, you're good.
That'd be a great test. I would like to do that one day.
Yeah, I think most people will just blow their nose on it because they're not going to
probably
read a poem at any cost. They'll refuse to read a poem at all costs. You know, they'll wipe their mouth and throw it away. Not me though. Not me. I'm a fan of the poetry, of course. I've been known to read some poetry here and there, of course. Love it. So that's great. You got this great book with Neopoesis Press. Yeah, this great little mini chap I'm looking at right now. And I'm curious, is it possible I could get you to read some poetry?
Sure. Let's see.
So read as much as you want, as little as you want. I can blather on for hours, so don't worry. Don't worry about dead airspace.
All right. Well, I'm going to start off with this one. It's called The See-Through Girl, which is in It Broke Anyway. The first time Kyle punched me, he did it on the thigh. He said he imagined bashing my head in with a hammer on a quiet evening in the summer. I asked him then, what is the point of banging through a ghost? He kept trying to kill me anyway, usually on Saturday nights, after the booze ran lukewarm and thin, The music sputtered and dulled out, and his boiling eyes caught me red-cunted, turned me translucent. He did it because his socks weren't sparkling white. He did it because I had the mean face of a fish. He did it because he simply ran out of things to say. He did it because he felt like it. He did it again and again until his hands unscrewed and returned to feathers. The last time Kyle punched me, the ghost left the house. I followed her, that see-through girl, all over town, until she stopped by the woods and held out a handful of leaves. She was blue, or maybe it was just the sky behind her, but she was there and she was grinning like a goon.
That's something else like a goon. I love that.
Want me to keep going?
Fuck yeah, keep going, please. Don't stop.
All right. Let's see.
Yeah, read a
this
few more in a row
called...
here.
Okay. This one's called The Wedding. The leaves opened their mouths wide and yelled through the branches like animals. I could not hear your words over the moaning of nature, but my throat crunched up anyway at the simple spider that climbed your dress and the slight shaking I saw on your shoulders, and him smiling at me from a folding chair as he drank a beer. I still do not know exactly what love is, and perhaps I never will, as a promise of family has now taken a different shape. But the concept grew a little more clear that night as we held hands in the dark wind and ran through the yard laughing when the fireworks created new stars that blasted louder and more beautiful than any sorrow of trees.
Nice.
All right. I'm going to change it up a little bit. This one's called Balls, and you have to say it just like that. Balls.
Yeah. It's like a little from law. It's a law in most towns.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I know a thing or two about balls. There are men who pretend to have them, filling their little flaps with jelly. There are men who actually hate their own, folding them in their laps like paper. There are men who will not leave them alone, puffing, feeling, tugging at skin and hair. I tell them all, it is just flesh. I once touched a set that was as rough as sandpaper. It confused me. I thought all manhood was made to slide, easy velvet, down a woman's hardened skin.
Balls. Just balls. Like just like that AC/DC. AC/DC, if you send that to them, they'll make a whole record out of that song. They've made a whole career out of nutsacks. The whole thing. Every record has some kind of nutsack anthem. They even got a new singer. Yeah, they got a new singer when he showed up. They were like, all right, well, what kind of nut songs do you have? He's like, I'm guessing.
Okay.
Got any more?
Yeah, I do.
All right, keep going.
She moves as I move. When I saw her hair move, I was reminded of how I can move, we can move. Because she does move like brown, pumping, splitting heart. There is a walking bridge. I have seen it move over the city. We were there together once. I saw her on it, moving inside that great cage. She moved her head. She moved her mouth. She moved. She asked if the walls were built, if that cage was built to prevent the movements, to stop the movers from moving, jumping, steaming, toppling off the bridge. I said, I guess so. Then I just watched her move, felt my own move, then felt sad that all of our movements are only temporary, that we must one day stop moving. Then we moved away. I saw her moving as she left, a walking, moving, brown, carousing, galloping, steering heart that just moved as I was moving and left anyway.
Well, that's some great shit right there. What's going on these days? Are you working on some brand new stuff? Are you in the middle of a creative wave or are you in the lull? It's usually one or the other, right?
Oh, I'm in the middle of a creative wave.
Yeah.
I have a manuscript that's almost finished, and
okay.
I have a publisher who has already agreed to publish it,
mm-hmm.
just based off of three poems from it. They actually haven't read the entire thing yet because it's not quite finished.
But you should send them the rest of the manuscript. Should just be like you bashing their publishing house in like poem form, calling them fucking shitheads and stuff.
Okay.
maybe it's almost done.
And it's a little bit thinner than it broke anyway. You know, because
people won't complain, right? They won't bitch at you if they're sending a long full length. What kind of complaint is that? It's insane. It's like you don't pay for the book by the pound, right? The publisher pays by the pound.
Yeah.
The person buying the book pays a fucking flat fee.
Yeah, so it's going to be about 120 to 130 pages. And
cool.
I'm really excited about it.
You got a title
Yeah, it's called Thin American Bread.
Thin American Bread?
Thin American Bread.
Nice.
I think it's a little spinoff of how I feel cultures or different cultures really put a lot of pride into their bread. You know, if you go to where I've lived before, Turkey, I mean, bread is everything there. And you come to America, skinny, it's bagged up in plastic, it's sold by the millions, it's gross, right?
It sucks. Bread sucks here.
Kind of like, there you go. Yeah. Bread sucks. Unless you go
Bread is good everywhere else. It sucks here. I went to Greece for a couple weeks, and we didn't know that the guy we were going to stay with, his father had been like the mayor of this little village in North Greece, and the villagers would come by and they'd have like rabbits. They'd come to the villa and they'd sell you rabbits, or they'd offer to cut your hair, or they'd bring bread and olives and oranges. It was great, but in America we keep to ourselves and our bread sucks. But I did hear something very interesting about bread, and maybe you heard this too, that it was invented as a means to make beer. Did you ever hear that? That it was because the grain would rot. So they would need to make alcohol out of the grain, but the easiest way for them to store the grain before it would go bad was to bake it into bread. So that was one theory about that, and I was like, well, there you go. I knew I liked bread for a reason.
Yeah.
I can dunk it in stuff, and I can get drunk off it one way or another. Fantastic.
Yeah, well, I know at least in Turkey, bread is a communal thing. You know, they bring out this huge thing of bread right out of the oven, and they just sit it in the middle of the table, and everyone just grabs from it, you know. And it's just this raw, like, you know, communal family thing that you can do. And here it's just whatever. Just slap some crappy meat on it and eat it.
Yeah. So you lived in Turkey. Where else have you lived?
Well, I was born in Louisiana.
Uh-huh. Saw that.
I'm actually I'm a military brat. My father was in the Air Force. So we've lived in Virginia, South Carolina, and Turkey, of course. And he was stationed in Minot, North Dakota. And that's just kind of how I've stuck around here. I've moved away a few times, but I keep coming back. It's like the black hole of life. It keeps sucking me back in.
Maybe it might be. It might be like the dark center of the universe. It might have some kind of negative gravitational pull. And who knows? Everything happens for a reason. Maybe there's a reason why you have to stay in Minot. Who knows?
I think there's definitely a reason. I think there's definitely a reason why I'm still here, because I've tried to leave several times over the years, and I'm still here, so there must be a reason why.
Fuck yeah. I hope you find eternal happiness in Minot or not in Minot, you know, however it works out. I really would like to try to pry some more writing out of you. I know I've got a bunch already, but I'm feeling greedy. You got anything else you would like to read?
Sure. I have a few that I can read from like the new stuff.
Please read some new stuff. Got a couple more minutes here. Read, give me like 4 or 5 poems, please.
Okay. Let's see. All right, this one's called He Does Not Remember My Name. The bathroom was tiled green and shiny. The sink flickered like a dying bulb, and the mirror reflected back the face of my grandfather then, younger, with gray streaking his black hair, his face more stern, but with a handsome chin, a roguish side grin. He shaved his face slowly, methodically. He used his hands. As I watched his process, the foam on that sharp chin was so thick. I wanted to sweep my forefinger across it. I wanted to taste what I was so sure to be sweet. But the skeleton arms of memory circled my ribs, swiveled me forward 20 years to the couch in his small apartment where he lives now, where he no longer remembers my name. We watch the Redskins lose again, and he tells me stories about his childhood, thoughts that stick with him like hoarfrost to pines. He tells me I need to speak to my mother, that he needs to speak to my mother, that someone, somewhere, must speak to my mother. He cries, and he misses his dead wife. He tells me he has quit cursing, then 10 minutes later he yells shit as the opposing team scores. His face seems shorter now, rounder, less obtrusive. He tells me I am pretty and that I should be married. He tells me he does not remember my name, but he remembers he loves me. I say it is all okay. I say he knows what I am called, somehow, somewhere. I bring thoughts of peonies to his feet. I bring the robin to his tree and listen as his little feet fall softly on his perch. As I get up to say goodbye, I touch his hand. I pray that the bird is not already slaughtered when I reach up and drop the seed. Let's see. This one's called Yellow and Orange and Bright. I sit on the edge of the planet at summer's end, watch this sunlit cold thing twist its round body toward nothing. I grow old with the dawn, but I am not sad anymore. Home is a place I know well, a place I do not miss, where the thunder collapses in mid-breath. Home sleeps like a child, kicking its strong leg into your ribs. It bleeds like I do, like we all do, one loaf of bread and a case of beer. The sky is quiet, but I can still hear its soft cry, yellow and orange and bright. I taste its blood. I taste the blood of everything. The grass will soon grow brown, and the flowers will part ways with earth. We will live anyway, twist our round bodies toward nothing.
That's something else right there. But that's some crazy lines. Some crazy lines in it. What's that poem called again?
Yellow and Orange and Bright.
All right, cool. I'm writing that down to remember that one for the future. Can you give me one more poem to lead us out?
Sure. This is a short one. It's called Bastard.
Nice.
It stops snowing today. The driveway is covered, muted. I cling to hope like a large triangle of dirt and ice lodged behind a tire. I have to be kicked repeatedly.
But the snow is coming, right?
Yes.
So what are you gonna do? Are you gonna get yourself a new shovel, sharpen the edge, and get ready, or what? Do you have a snowblower? A snowblower as big as like my house?
I do not have a snowblower. You know, I rent an apartment, so, I mean,
it's not really up to me
to plow, you know?
Yeah. Oh, good, all right. You don't have your own little side plow business, all right.
Yeah, so I have to sit around and wait for the landlord to decide to come dig me out of the blizzard.
Yeah, we have, we rent here in New York City, too, and you know, obviously it doesn't get as cold as it gets there, and I don't want to, you know, you're going to make fun of me any second now about that. But, yeah, we're pussies here, and when it gets kind of cold out, you know, you want the heat to come on. So you call the landlord. He sends the super, and the super is a guy from Russia, really. He comes up here, and he's been in the country for a couple of years, and he tells you, he's like, in Russia, the snow is up to the windows, and all this shit, you know. Like, come on, man. It's 45 degrees. Turn the heat on, please. You know, Russia sounds great.
45? It was colder than that this morning here.
Oh, here we go. Yeah, I know. It's cold in Minot. It's Minot. You know, it's freezing. Your birds are all gone. They've been gone since, you know, our version of spring. I understand. It's cold there. Oh, shit.
No, it got up to like 80 today. The weather is so strange here. I mean, 40, 50 degrees in one day difference. Yeah. Doesn't matter.
Well, it sounds like you got a lot of cool stuff there too, though. A lot of good nature out there in North Dakota. A lot of stuff to see. I traveled through there when I was 20. I think I spent about a week and a half driving through North Dakota. And I enjoy it.
North
Dakota. Yeah, I went cross country and I did it in like 2 months. And we spent a lot of time. We came home real slow across the north part of the country, stopping all the national parks and everything. Mostly when I say I went cross country, I spent a lot of time in California and then coming real slow across the north, hitting all the national parks, and it was great. It was a great time.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So I want to thank you for coming on the show tonight and reading these great poems. I am excited to read It Broke Anyway, and I'm looking forward to your new collection, and I hope that I wish you, hope for good things for you, and I wish you much success with all of your endeavors as they come and go, and I hope that we get to talk again when your new book comes out.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, party on. Enjoy your wine. I'm going to go eat my Chinese food and drink the 3 beers we found behind the lettuce, okay?
Awesome. All right.
Catch you later.
All right, bye.
So that's the show for tonight. I want to thank all the guests that were so kind to come on and spend their Tuesday nights with me. I know there's some great shit on TV, probably. I don't know for sure, because we have like 2 channels now. Something happened with our cable. We now need a digital box. We don't have it yet. So who knows what's really on. So next week, who knows what's going to happen also. Be back Tuesday night, 7 p.m. same spot for some links. And enjoy your week, whatever it brings. Thanks for listening. Good night.